Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. KHOI listeners may know Tom as the host of the Morning Masterpieces show, Film Scores with Tom Beal. But he has another persona as lifelong journalist in print, radio, and as the morning news producer for WOI-TV. Yes, newcomers, Iowa State University once had its own TV station. So Tom has a deep concern with the subject of today's program, which is about how election coverage is changing and what new challenges and opportunities it finds with the advent of social media. But before we begin our discussion of media coverage of this current election, I'd like to introduce you to something new at KHOI. We originally broadcast this as a live broadcast at 7 a.m. Monday morning, November the 6th. So you're hearing a rebroadcast. We can see that this is a much better way to have real interaction with the people in our listening audience. Not so much as call-ins yet. We tried some call-ins this morning, as you'll hear, and we'd like to have your suggestions via email. And we have set up a special website for that, KHOI Talk, KHOI TALK, at gmail.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. But for now, let's get back to our discussion of the media. I'll give you a little introduction to our four distinguished guests, who are three active journalists who contributed in major ways to informing Ames citizens about the candidates and issues of this election. First was Loris Olson, who hosted three shows live on KHOI with interviews of all the candidates for the city council that will be on the ballot tomorrow. Hope you'll all vote. And Loris previously spent many years covering Ames City politics and recently published Ames News Online. Our second guest is Alexandra Hain, editor of the Ames Daily Tribune, which through its articles and letters to the editor provides the major election coverage informing many Ames residents. Third, we have Caitlin McCullough, editor of the Iowa State Daily, which informs the tens of thousands of potential voters in the Iowa State campus. This year, the Daily has taken an unusually active interest in the election. Our fourth guest is Mayor Ann Campbell, and her role as a journalistic critic will be revealed later in the program. As we get started, I'd like to talk to Tom just a little bit about his concerns with the coverage of local elections and how it's changed.
Well, both the Daily and Ames News Online, when Loris was still publishing it, and the Ames Tribune have faced some new challenges, largely due to the fact that social media have become so important in our communication process. What's happened is that the old days when the media laid out for the reader or the viewer or the listener what the topics would be, these were done by the editors who chose from among dozens of stories that they could broadcast or print, and they would display them in their publication or on the air, and the listeners, viewers, and readers would be exposed to all kinds of information they might not otherwise seek out because they didn't know anything about it. Today, with social media and with focused information that's available, many people are now seeking out information that they may already agree with or on topics they're already familiar with. And the opportunity for serendipitous discovery is reduced. And that, I think, has happened here in our community, and our guests suggested that indeed was happening. So that is one change that we did explore with our guests and which we will be talking about as the hour progresses.
Well, one of the things that our guests didn't cover this morning in our original broadcast was the way the letters to the editor developed in the Ames Tribune. I found this particularly interesting because although Alexandra Hain said she didn't arrange them, it happened that The letters were very nicely balanced. There was never a time when one candidate had a letter and his or her opponent didn't have a letter to match it. And they were often on similar topics. But as the campaign progressed, they got more and more pointed. And on one hand, there was some unfortunate nastiness. On the other hand, the writers made more and more of an effort to outline what their real concerns were and what the issues were, much more than I think the Tribune would have dared to do. But it was, I thought, very interesting and informative.
Well, I've been involved in some campaigns, and I know often there's an urgency on the part of the campaigns and their supporters to write general letters of endorsement. And these are rather bland, and they don't really do much. But when there's an issue that excites people, the letters do become more pointed. And then it is a challenge to the media to make sure that they're not publishing something that's untrue or really unfair. And I understand that with the Tribune, that is indeed what they try to do, is to eliminate letters that are completely wrong or have misinformation, but yet give everybody a chance to appear. And they do have one policy, and that is if you write a letter, you only get to be published once a month.
Well, that sounds great, Tom. Let's hear what our guests have to say about this.
I think another phenomenon, speaking kind of about Facebook specifically, that we're seeing in this election that we've never had before is that with the Tribune and Ames News Online, 4 years ago, neither one of us really had a filter for our comments. Okay, and now I know the Tribune, I think, sign in through Facebook. And of course, I don't publish Ames News Online, but the last election and some of the last commentaries, wow. I mean, I was on there twice a day taking stuff off and hoping I caught it before people saw it. And so the filter for social media on Facebook, to counter what you're saying, Tom, is that there have been some groups that have come up. They started as community groups on Facebook. I'm thinking of one in particular, Ames People, which has about 1,700 residents with some very different views, and they're starting to vet the vet those issues between themselves. The problem is that you're not getting necessarily that somewhat objective vetting of that you get with a reporter or an editor sitting there, and there's a lot of pressure then put on a volunteer moderator. But, you know, so yes, the dialogue is occurring in a very different way. I also think sometimes with social media, when the information's forwarded and forwarded again, we end up with a few problems. And I was on Facebook last night getting ready for this. And to give you just an idea, when I'm smiling at Alexander, because I don't mean to pick, because I don't think it's not your fault, okay? Just so happens as people are passing around the coverage of candidate interviews that the Tribune has done, and they've done a really good job, the default to pull up the picture that comes with it happens to be of one particular candidate. And yeah, so and that's just how electronic media automatically sorts through what it pulls up as far as images. So now there's a discussion going on about whether that's favoritism or not. And so the paper or ANO or anybody is stuck with now we have to explain how social media works behind the scenes, that it's not our fault. So
right, and things that happen because of technology, mm-hmm. or simple human error, which we are all capable of. It seems like it things like that take on a life of their own among particularly partisan groups. You know, I think that to kind of reflect on what Laura said about interest in the election, I agree to a certain point that interest among the people who are interested is very high and very passionate. But when you look at voter turnout in Ames, and we're in the single digits year after year, election after election, I would have to say that the vast majority of people in Ames are not engaged. I wish they were, but they're not.
You know, this raises the general question, the broader question of voter participation in all elections and the difficulty we have in our democracy of making it a true democracy when fewer than half the people vote. And then there are those who claim there's a concerted effort to suppress voter turnout. And what effect does that have? Well, it means a small organized group can gain control of the government. And this has always been a role of the media to keep on top of that so that this doesn't happen. This social media brings up a related issue, and that has to do with letters to the editor. And those have always been a subject of criticism. People always seem to complain that, oh, they didn't run my letter, they didn't run it in time, and so on. So let me ask, Alexandra, what is the Tribune's policy in choosing the letters? When do they run? Do you have a plan for balance so that you don't run more letters for one person than another and so on?
Our policy is pretty much that we run all the letters that we get. We have a geographic area. We print letters from people who are within our circulation area. We have a policy of one letter per author per month. And other than that, there are very few reasons that we don't run a letter. So when you look at the letters to the editor that have been running in the Tribune, those are all of the letters that we received.
Do you make any effort to avoid printing letters that you know have blatant errors in them?
Oh, yeah. If a letter has an obvious falsehood in it or is libelous, then we will either contact that letter writer to have them revise it, or we just won't run the letter.
I know in the past it was customary for newspapers to contact any letter writer before they published the letter. And with social media, that's harder to do because you don't have the staff really to commit to that. And now with this use of Facebook to help screen bogus letters, at least there's some screening going on there.
Well, now, for the letters that appear in print, we have contacted each and every one of the writers to make sure that they did, in fact, write the letter and send it to us. We don't have that kind of control over the comments that appear in social media or at the bottom of our stories.
Right.
We instituted the Facebook and other sign-ins to try and cut back right. on anonymous commenting. But we still do.
Have you, either one of you, experienced what you think is an organized effort to control coverage?
Up here, there were a couple of times after when I did Ames 365 and ANO, so after I went to the internet, that I did have business people make comments to me indicating that if I would support something, they could possibly help my fledgling organizations get more advertising dollars. And my response to them was, you know me better than that. Both of these people happen to, I think, know me well enough, which surprised me, but also for them to make that gesture. I shut them down right away. And obviously, since I'm not publishing anymore because of money.
You're not tipping, yeah.
But I did, yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, the Tribune, we have a lot of contact with a lot of people, and everyone who contacts us generally has an agenda, you know, that they want a certain kind of coverage. They want a story done on XYZ. That happens all the time. It's not unique to elections. It's just sort of a daily occurrence.
You know, there's so much cynicism among a lot of people, especially many of them toward the media. They think the media are balanced, biased anyway. And so you cannot afford to risk your credibility by appearing to be co-opted by advertisers.
We have to take a station ID now. So excuse me. Welcome to Local Talk Live. live on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Susan Franzen, together with Tom Beal, co-host. In the first portion of our program this morning, our guests are Alexandra Hain of the Daily Tribune and Loris Olson, most recently publisher of Ames News Online. They've been discussing the challenges of covering tomorrow's city election, monitoring letters to the editor, dealing with new opportunities in social media. Now, you have a chance to ask them any questions you may have, either by calling 292-2878 or at our Facebook page, KHOI Community Radio. We'll take your calls, and Rick will be sitting by to read whatever you put on our Facebook page.
You know, as we pick up this discussion, it occurs to me that you're faced with a challenge of determining, well, what are we going to cover and what aren't we going to cover? You don't have unlimited resources. And what is the method by which you decide what you're going to cover in a political campaign?
Your reporter, hopefully, as an editor, or if you kind of do both at times as I did, you follow what is getting a lot of discussion around the dais of the various races. What is getting a lot of feedback and interest? What packs the chamber hall, the council hall? Okay. Also, you have discussions with a lot of people on the street. And the longer you develop your beat or your reporter develops the beat, the more you know what the trigger issues are for specific communities. And that helps dictate it. And then you go from there and what the reactions are. And news is of a 24-hour cycle where then when something comes up that's out of the ordinary and becomes an issue about the campaign itself rather than the overall issues, you have to jump on that. And that's really what dictates you. Even when I had a reporter that I assigned, you know, pretty much to cover City Hall, you have one that covers City Hall. It is not possible to do everything we could, which I think is a good, it's good that in the last decade, I've seen more groups come up and sponsor their own forums. Now, when they're open to the public, I think that's great. The Amos Forum is a good example of a group that opened up to the public. Over the 11 years I've been here, I've seen candidates brought in to closed sessions, like from groups who can do that, like the Ames Rental Association, I remember, did, the Ames Home Builders Association, okay? And they're nonprofits, but as long as they bring in all the candidates, they can do that, and they don't have to open up to the public. I'd like to see all of those opened up, though. So.
Well, I think What Laura said is pretty much how it's done. I mean, you have, the Tribune has a city reporter who covers City Hall all the time. So that person is our local expert on what is being talked about and what's important and what the issues are facing the city today and going forward. So that kind of forms the basis of our interviews and what we talk to candidates about. And then, like Laura said, then things happen. And we have to decide, okay, is this going to be a story for us or is this not? The example in this campaign was the campaigning at the Greek houses. It went from rumor to story in about a day and a half. We started hearing talk and then talking amongst ourselves and decided, you know what, we have to see what we can find out about this. So that's the unexpected. Otherwise most campaigns follow a fairly
predictable path. I think both of you touched on a fact that people have to keep in mind. You can't force feed your audience information they don't want. If you could devote your front page to issues that you are determined, you are convinced are important. But if they're not interested, you're wasting space, right?
That is definitely true, and I'm going to go back then to my days with the Ames Life and Times, and some of the older listeners or people who've lived in the community longer remember we had some issues around construction at the high school, a renovation and the development of new Ames Middle School, and I was spending a lot of resources on that, and I had a lot of control over my own budget, which was unusual for section editors, but I reported through a different venue. Anyway, my boss came to me and said, you know, it's great news coverage, and this is what we do at the Register, but do you think anybody really gives a crap? excuse my language. But,
I assume that was a direct quote.
That was a direct quote. Okay. So, and it, you know, so you do, you make those decisions daily about what, where do you devote your resources?
Right. And you have to, you know, we're constantly juggling what we think readers want to read about and what we kind of think we should. It's like we're trying to serve a balanced meal every day, some broccoli along with the dessert.
And then you try to make it as interesting as you can. When I taught journalism, I didn't promote this. Really, I didn't. But the fact is that there are certain model story structures, and one of them is the conflict structure. So if you have a relatively dull city council meeting, you see if you can find some kind of conflict. And it may be simply two council members arguing with each other. That's the lead, because then you've got some action. There's some dynamics to that story. Otherwise, might be dull.
Well, that explains something that's bothered me a lot in news. And at that point, I think we're going to have to leave you two. Thank you very, very much. Both Loris Olson and Alexandra Hain for getting up early and joining us today. This is KHOI-FM, and now for the second half of the program, please.
Well, may I say farewell and thank you for taking time to talk to us about this. The dynamics of news coverage, really interesting to me, and there were several questions I wish we could have gotten to, but we didn't have time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Now for the second half of the program, we have two guests with different perspectives on city council coverage. First is Caitlin McCullough, editor of the Iowa State Daily, who will be followed by Mayor Ann Campbell, who came from a family of journalists and has had many years to critique local news coverage from the perspective of its subject, both as council member and as mayor. We'll provide an opportunity for call-ins after each of these interviews. Now, are you ready? Tom, we'll go with Caitlin first. Caitlin?
Well, first, thank you both for coming. It's great to have you here, Mayor in particular. It's an unusual thing to have. Well, not so unusual. Every once in a while, a journalist will go into politics, but usually they're separated, and different points of view and different experiences. And so I'm glad that you're here, and we're going to explore a little of your experience and knowledge as we proceed. I wanted to ask Caitlin talk a bit about her role as editor of a student newspaper. Students are notoriously disinterested in politics unless something, maybe a national campaign, comes along, but generally not interested in local politics. Maybe it's because they don't yet feel they're part of the community where they're living. But this particular campaign has been interesting because suddenly an issue came up that generated a lot of interest among the Greek community on campus, and your paper was right on top of it with several good stories and an editorial explaining what was going on and the consequences of that particular story. Let me ask you to, if you would, discuss or describe briefly what that was and how you dealt with it.
Well, we found out about some issues in the Greek community, and of course, some things that came up in City Council were issues with fire codes when it came to the Greek houses. Housing is always a major issue when it comes to students. We all want to know where we're going to live, and so that's certainly something that piqued the interest of many students, especially those who were part of those communities. That being said, there was some information that went around the communities that kind of wasn't accurate. And it's, excuse me, it's kind of, you know, trying to figure out what is the truth and what isn't, even as our young reporters are trying to learn how to cover a campaign themselves, many for the first time, that having kind of a curveball thrown in added an interesting new element to the election this year. I thought they all did a great job, and it's now trying to make sure that students are going into the polls tomorrow with as accurate of information as we can provide them, and hopefully we've piqued their interest in paying attention to really what is going on so they understand that this does affect them. It does impact their daily lives, and it's important to be paying attention to the news.
Well, I thought your coverage was very good, and you pointed out something that I wanted to ask the editor of the Tribune as well, and that is the challenge of covering complex news with relatively young reporters who haven't had the years of experience yet to understand what's going on and how to put things in perspective. And you have a particular challenge because virtually all of your reporters are still learning, and some of them have had actually no formal journalism training. They're learning on the job.
Yes, that is something we deal with every day. And not only that, but our editors and myself, we are all in our first time as editors. So we equally are learning and of ethics and, what the correct questions to ask, the correct ways to proceed, and how to educate our new reporters on how to proceed. So altogether, it can be very complex, but it's with the goal that we hope to learn now. So when we do enter as professional journalists, we can enter knowing what we are supposed to be doing, hopefully much sooner, and not making those mistakes then. And you know, it's a lot of students are very passionate, and it's about being transparent when we have made mistakes, and understanding that we are going to make mistakes and we're learning from those mistakes. So just kind of. It's a constant lesson, and we have some great advisors helping us, and we just kind of go each day at a time of what can we do better the next day.
I should mention I was a faculty advisor to the Daily for several years, some years ago, and one thing I always felt proud of is that the ISU Daily never went off the deep end as some student newspapers did and became just kind of crazy radical. I mean, I think the commitment to covering news as best you could has always been there. Mayor Campbell, I wanted to ask you from your vantage point as both from a journalist family and then as a public servant for many years, how do you assess, or how would you assess the quality of media coverage of Ames politics and Ames city government?
Whoa. Well, first of all, you had earlier indicated that I was a journalist. I've got to disclaim that right off the bat. I do come from a family of journalists, which probably is one of the things that piqued my interest in getting into the political realm in the first place when you have this come home to your dinner table every night. But I think that it is probably, I'm sure people in the journalism field, Caitlin, Alexandra, Loris, and so on, perhaps feel on edge about me because I look at it, a coverage with a critical eye, and one of the critical eyes I look at is to feel almost the teacher. I'm a teacher more than I'm a journalist. Responsibility for helping to educate. Young journalists particularly. I have the opportunity almost every semester to appear in front of journalism classes as they are coming to cover a city council meeting. And so I try to give some guidance as to what is a holistic picture. Earlier you talked about the fact that if there's a boring city council meeting, which
far be it from me to think they're boring city council meetings, but it's easy then to make a story out of something that really isn't a story, like two council members at each other's throats or something.
You know, and there's a big difference, too, among council members' meetings in the past, because they are now carried on cable, and people sitting home can watch and see what's going on and get the direct feedback. They don't have to wait for the journalists to provide a distillation of what happened, and that can be good and bad, I suppose.
And I'm always interested to see how many people actually do spend their evenings watching those meetings, going to the grocery store the next morning. Is always an interesting experience.
So what have you discovered? Are there lots of people watching?
There are an incredible number of people watching. Now, statistically, I can't answer, but I'm always struck by people that I think would not necessarily have an interest, but that have watched. I would have thought they might have been at their bowling leagues rather than watching the city council. But and that's a good and bad thing, too, because not a good and bad thing. It's something with mixed reviews, because I think there then can be a danger for council members and for people speaking at council to be grandstanding, knowing that it is going to be on television and the next vote might come from there. I see some of this.
Do you think this election, this could be a question for both of you, been more interesting in the issues raised and the candidates running and that kind of thing than, say, some recent elections?
Every election is an interesting one with different twists. I'm always struck with never being able to predict what issues are going to come and get traction. One of the things, since I am not a voting member of council and have been mayor for a while, I've had the opportunity to have candidates or people who are thinking about running on all sides of the issue come say, what's it like, you know, what advice do you have, and so on. And thinking back on this election, I think several of those people, many of whom did not run, of course, but several who came, and my prediction of what we'd see, they're probably looking at me now and say, Ann, you didn't have a handle on what was going to be going on.
It's kind of a mystery in many ways, isn't it? You don't know what you're going to find. You told me something the other day that I found interesting, and that was I always thought one of the challenges of being a candidate, or of being an office holder, rather, is that people will call you up at all hours of the day and night to complain or comment. And you told me that happens less now than it used to.
It happens much less with the advent of email. It used to be my phone did ring day and night. My children got programmed as to how to answer the phone politely during those times. But now, and I regret this, frankly, email has taken over, and the downside, I believe, of email is that you don't have the opportunity for a dialogue. And so it's harder to diffuse some information or some questions that may or may not have validity. And also, I'm very, very cautious about responding to those emails, because even if it's a friend of mine who is emailing, I don't know who their friends are and how far and wide it's going to go. So I'm sad to see that.
This is a great lead-in for our invitation to our listeners to call in. If they want to, you can call in now, and you can not only talk to Mayor Campbell, but you can talk to Caitlin about what's going on at the Daily or anything you might be thinking about the Daily. Our number is 292-2878, or send us a message at our Facebook page, KHOI Community Radio.
Well, Caitlin, I wanted to ask you how you perceived political coverage since you've been editor. I think this is the only campaign, has it not? This only election since you've been editor that's currently underway?
Yes. I was a managing editor last year during the elections, which was an eye-opener and a lot going on last year. But this would be my first as editor-in-chief, and it's, I'd say, a very big learning experience, and I'm hoping to take away a lot of, you know, mistakes that I've made, which I certainly have made mistakes, and also successes that we've had, and hopefully make it so next year and in the coming years, the future editors are a bit more prepared than maybe I was, and I can pass that knowledge along so we don't make the same mistakes over and over again.
But I'd like to insert here that I am always applaud the Daily for the good coverage that it produces, and the advantage of having more reporters can I think do some in-depth things that when you have a newspaper where you have to pay your reporter to get out and do the coverage, it's more difficult. And I'm always pleased then to see reporters that I've met as Daily reporters, some of whom then come back to be the professional yeah. reporters and have that good background.
There was a time when ISU graduates, journalism graduates, ended up at the Register quite frequently mm-hmm. and often then came back to cover news in Ames and elsewhere. What do you think, Caitlin, is the most significant issue in the current campaign of interest to your readers?
I mean, definitely to highlight, too, is just about anything going down on with campus town redevelopment. Students always want to know. I mean, a lot of them see that very much as their space, and are always interested in what is going to be happening in the future. At the same time, like I said, Greek housing when it comes to fire codes and just the possibility of housing in the future. Where will I live next year is a big question that's always on students' minds. But usually the biggest issue also is the fact that the constant turnover that takes place in college, these issues come up and students have their thoughts and their opinions, and some come into the middle of the issue that started a year or two ago, and now they're freshmen and they're just getting into the issue and learning what it is. And others are there when the issue begins, and then they graduate. So that's always kind of a difficulty, not only with coverage, but with students being politically active and feeling, hey, if their voice matters or is going to be heard.
I might add to that the transition of students, which is the community that we have, but the fact that there's a 3-month hiatus can, I think, be a challenge in that the assumption is if there's something that impacts students at all, it ought to just be put on hold. An example now, I think, is the Kirkland expansion in Campus Town, and frankly, things that are moving along in a process, be it a development process or a city government process, can't be put on hold. So that's a delicate thing for us in city government to be sensitive to the fact that there are student interests that want to have a voice, but during times that the world can't come to a stop, life is marching along.
And maybe when they return to town, they wonder, how come this happened while we were gone?
Exactly.
Station break time. Welcome to Local Talk Live on KHOI Community Radio, where we are talking today about press coverage of the local elections to be held tomorrow. I'm your host today with Tom Beal, my co-host, and we are talking with Caitlin McCullough, editor of the Iowa State Daily, and with Mayor Ann Campbell. And thank you for coming out so early, and we have a few more minutes to deal with issues that haven't been covered yet.
Well, Caitlin, you mentioned what you saw as the key issues, and the development of Campus Town is an ongoing one. I was commenting the other day that I came to Ames in 1975, and Campus Town was kind of a flat. I mean, there wasn't much going on there, and I would say all these years later now, there seems to be a lot going on, and not all of it is entirely embraced by everyone. I think there's a desire to preserve the unique qualities, and when you upgrade, sometimes that means little interesting shops have to go and so on. But I think the Daily has tried to keep on top of that over the years and has done its best. Mayor Campbell, you are presiding over a growing city. I guess we can say you're presiding as much as you can be in a city of such diverse interests. And that's created some interesting challenges, I would assume. And one, this is more of an issue, but it could be a media issue as well. And that is the controversy over the development of South Duff Avenue. This is a floodplain area that has flooded many times over the last several years. And I'm wondering if you feel the press, both the Daily and the Tribune and Ames Online previously, have covered that development. Because what we're seeing now, of course, are individual businesses being built up on bluffs, rather, and other businesses are still down in the hole, so that if we ever have a flood, what will happen to them, one wonders. So I'm wondering if, as a member of the council, if you, well, have the media covered the issue to the point where the community understands what's happening and why it's important for that development to occur?
Well, far be it for me to say what the public understands, but I think you point out that it is an extraordinarily complex issue with a variety of things fighting against each other, not people fighting against each other, but facts fighting against each other. At our last council meeting, we had a very in-depth report on flood mitigation. Let's face it, where we live, we're never going to not have floods. And so mitigating the damage is the thing that we are most concerned about. And it's interesting to me as we look at South Duff and the requirements that are placed for building on South Duff now, as new businesses come in, we need to balance that then against where do they go otherwise, and urban sprawl. And let's go back to a few elections ago when, if we'd been having this conversation, it would have been, what do you think about that new mall that's a potential on East 13th Street? It doesn't flood on East 13th Street. So these are the kinds of land use balances that I think that we need to examine. Point being, we can't look at anything just in isolation. And it's also interesting to me, as I know a whole lot more about floods and what than I did several years ago, and never want to see one again, but I'm sure we will, it's easy for those of us who are laymen, and I'm certainly in that category, to say, well, if you build here, it's going to flood someplace else, when I become increasingly aware that there are mitigations that can take place within. Now, it's interesting to see what the university has done in the new and the mitigation that's gone on around the Hilton Coliseum, this Syride building, and many businesses themselves, you know, are looking at whether or not to do that. So I guess the long and the short of that is I probably haven't answered your question.
Well, I was thinking whether you thought the media had covered the very complex issues sufficiently for the general public to understand what's going on.
Well, and again, I'm not sure that, I mean, studying it would be a full, or covering it would be a full-time job.
Yeah.
I'd like to put in a plug for our next Local Talk Live, because as we planned this program, it was suggested to us that we should get the various interest groups who really are studying these things more or less full-time and bring them together at the table. And that's, we'll be doing that in our next program and possibly in subsequent programs, because there are many of these interest groups, and some particularly devoted to the issue of water control, like the Squaw Creek
Skunk River.
The Watershed.
Watershed
Coalition, yes. Right. Squaw Creek Watershed. And, yes, there may be others. I'm sure there are. And there are, of course, many devoted to the issues of campus town, you know, there are. So we will be talking with those in the future. And so trying to give you something to cover.
I'm interested that you bring that up. I am a member of the Squaw Creek Watershed organization that is run by the county. But it that, too, is enlightening, because we are meeting with people all up and down, particularly to the north of us. And so it's interesting to have that opportunity for a broader discussion, which it's easy for us in Ames then to just say, well, it's an issue on South Duff, when it certainly isn't just an issue on South Duff. Either the flooding or the effluent, the runoff.
Caitlin, you haven't, I assume you have not been here during a great flood. You would have been very young when the last one occurred, but it wasn't that long ago for most of us. So maybe the flooding issues are not a big topic of concern to students and to your readers. Do you, though, and this comes back to a more fundamental question, and that is there used to be the discussion of town gown division, where the town had its own interests. The campus was separate, and there wasn't much interaction. But as editor of the Daily, do you see more of an interaction, more integration of the campus with the city itself?
I think I'm seeing it more often, and I think that's a good thing. I do think the two should interact quite frequently. I mean, students are learning what it's like to be a community member and to have a voice for the first time in their communities, and a lot of it comes through them learning to recognize that issues that might not even seem important to them at the moment, whether it's flood mitigation or, you know, bringing new businesses into Ames, those do impact their lives. There are students who will choose to stay in Ames, and the decisions made now will impact them in the future. And not only that, but it changes, you know, where they are able to live and the jobs that they are able to have and so many factors that are there. And it's just learning to bring that perspective of helping them understand how it's important to them, which is certainly one of the biggest challenges we face, because we at the Daily are also learning what those things mean to us and why they are important to us. So it's kind of a shared experience of learning that together. But I do think that the Ames community and Iowa State need to completely interact in almost everything they do.
Well, the fact that you cover city council meetings is a good example of the interest that you see in the citywide news, not just the campus.
I might add that we do have a government of the student body represented on city council. I always admire that person because, frankly, a lot of the things covered by city council, it's pretty remote to think that they are of intense interest to students. But we've had extraordinarily a number of devoted students to doing that. I think they have a great responsibility then, because it's their job to go back to the government of the student body and be the microphone for what's going on. And that's much harder, I believe, than being a council member. I'd also like to point out that as I meet with other communities around the state, around the nation, that our university communities such as ours, I think we hear a number of compliments about the relationship, the town and gown relationship, and the cooperative rather than antagonistic feeling. And I think that a lot of people don't understand how much there is, you know, codependent on one another. Just for example, the city fire department budget. 25% of that comes from Iowa State University, not being line-itemed out as to how many times did the fire truck go, but it's much more efficient to use the Ames Fire Department than for the university to have one. That's not always the case, and we've got SciRide is another example. The Furman Aquatic Center is built on university land, so the interaction, I think, is extremely positive here.
And I think you've tried to reflect that in the coverage in the Daily. I wanted to ask you some questions about the Daily. When I was faculty advisor of the Daily was fat. Lots of advertising. In fact, there was the pizza war going on. Two large pizza chains were competing for the back page. Color ad. Lots of revenue coming in. Money to buy cameras and send students on trips and so on. Like all printed media, the Daily has kind of shrunk a bit. And I know a lot of efforts being made to develop the online presence. And so even though we're focusing on the political campaign, I think this might relate. How would you say you're dividing up your resources between the traditional print and the online presence?
We are moving into multiple platforms, constantly looking at what is the future of journalism and where do we fall into that. We still very much rely on our print product, but at the same time, we have an online website that can bring anywhere. Usually we average 80 to 100,000 page views a week, which we're very proud of, and we're continuing to work to understand what type of coverage should go in the paper, should go online, what should overlap, as well as our use of social media. We have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter page, and we're constantly sharing. And what we see a lot there is a lot of interaction. That's where our readers like to come to comment, to share the stories that either they're shocked by or they're very highly interested in. So it's a good area to gauge where the reader is paying attention and what areas they're not necessarily understanding as well. At the same time, we also have another platform, which we have a tablet and mobile app. So people can get us on their cell phone. They can get us on their tablet. So it's really just almost any way you would like to have the news, you can get it. It's now just discovering how do you present that news on each platform?
And the revenue is a concern, too. Yep. Some student newspapers have gone to, and so have commercial newspapers, have gone to a 2 or 3 day a week publication schedule. Is the Daily considering moving away from the print product to exclusively online?
You know, at the moment, we are not. We still value all of our platforms, and we want to be presenting all of those platforms to our readers as much as possible. So at the moment, we continue to be a Daily, and we're very proud of that.
Excellent.
Well, good for you. And thank you so much for being here. It's time to sign off. You've been listening to Local Talk Live. It's live at 7 a.m. on Monday, the 4th of November, the day before our city council election, at KHOI Community Radio. Today, we've been talking about press coverage of the city council election. Our guests this morning have been Loris Olson, longtime journalist in Ames, and Alexandra Hain, editor of the Ames Daily Tribune, Caitlin McCullough, editor of the Iowa State Daily, and Mayor Ann Campbell. This show was produced by all of us, by Ursula Rutenberg, Tom, and me, and production, I'm Susan Franson. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.